This is WJBC This Week.
You do not need to be Catholic to be moved by the Pope's words.
I thought to myself, this fella is for real.
When are we going to have the conversation about how we're shoring up our general fund?
If we're not going to pay for our programs, we got to figure out who's going.
Obviously, meth is different than cannabis. The effects of it all.
The law is crystal clear. There is no requirement that the state show impairment.
As the court keeps issuing orders to say, write checks, write checks, write checks, write checks, who's tracking this?
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, as Pope Francis makes an unprecedented series of speeches in the U.S., we have reaction from a local Catholic leader. A former speechwriter for a scandal-plagued politician shares his stories in her new book. Susan Saunders talks to comedian Bill Engvall, who's coming to Illinois State University to perform during family weekend. IHU's football coach Brock Spack and his wife play the newlywed game, plus WJBC's Throwback Thursday interview with a former WJBC reporter who recalls Farm Aid 30 years later. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Pope Francis made history this week when he spoke to a joint session of Congress and later before the United Nations. The Catholic leader brought a message of humility and environmental and social consciousness. WJBC's Terry James talked this week with his sister Sylvia from the St. John Paul II Catholic Newman Center at Illinois State University for a reaction to the speech and what the Pope's words truly mean.
There's a lot of misunderstanding. If he talks to us about, you know, what the weather's going to be like tomorrow, that has no bearing on whether it would be correct or not. But what he teaches with regard to faith and morals, it's what's, in a sense, what's protected by the Lord, that it would be what we believe, what would guide us into the truth.
Well, you know, and he is needed right now in America because our politicians can't follow basic fundamentals that I think all religions agree on, which is work with others and treat others like you want to be treated. When he said that line yesterday to Congress, they were clapping before he even finished it.
Yes, I was very moved by that, to see that. I just saw that. I felt very much that we were like in a classroom, and we had the ability to say, wow, we all agree on this. You know, here are all these people that have all this power, and yet we could say our common humanity, you know, that we have to treat each other with love and justice and fraternity and compassion, and nobody's left out. And I was so moved by that. And at the same time, here we have him talking to, he's addressed the whole family, you know, the whole human family. He's talking to Congress, he's talking to the elderly, to all American workers, the young, the immigrant, the incarcerated. Even our earth, the poor, the hungry, those who are left out, do not leave them out, the excluded, businessmen, families, children, those who have trouble praying. He included the whole family and just talked to all of us using our common language, love. Yeah, I was very moved by that too.
It was moving, and I like this Pope, and he has, it's funny that they take, you know, likability ratings for the Pope on TV and put how much they, you know, he's got like a politician, he's got favorability ratings.
Yeah.
But I think it's because one of the messages that he's delivered is that he's not here to judge others, that's God's job.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think others get confused about. What do you think it meant for him to go in front of Congress? Because that was uncharted territory for a pope.
Mm-hmm. I think I just go back to the, I love very much when he said about the elderly, that they have a wisdom that can help the next generations. And I think very much that he's coming in that vein also with the spiritual richness, but also in the vein of bringing us together as a family to work together. And the United States has such a capacity to lead the world for good and for bad because it's a leader. And he's encouraging us to do what these other four American great three men and one woman have done in the past in the different areas that they've done. And so he spoke about Lincoln bringing freedom, and he spoke about Martin Luther King, who fought for the rights of all our brothers and sisters to be given full rights, and Dorothy Day working for the oppressed and those who are poor and hungry and excluded, and Thomas Merton, who has an ability to dialogue with others and at the same time has a depth about him because of his communion with the Lord, with God. And so as he's talking to us about these four men to the United States, he's bringing to us a source of inspiration to live those principles that these four men and three men and one woman have done in the United States, and inviting us to do the same, you know, to whatever areas we're in, like you right now in the media, you know, you're bringing out a good word to others to maybe inspire them also. And in all the different areas that I mentioned, that he addressed so many areas, inspiring us to live the fullness in our area, wherever we're at. If we're the businessmen, to do so ethically in all the different areas. To the Congress, you know, they have an ability to reach the common good and work for and fight for the common good, and that's their role. So it's so beautiful to hear. He's so unifying. He was so unifying to all of them. And so much electric applause at different times. We have one of our sisters was actually invited by Congressman LaHood to be present, and she just came back from D.C., and she said it was so moving to see the enthusiasm. Nobody was being reprimanded. All were being challenged to do our good, to do our best, to bring the dignity of each person to the fore in all their different areas. Just very beautiful.
Well, and Sister, we're talking with Sister Sylvia about the Pope's visit to the United States. Security was unprecedented, and even I cringe sometimes because the Pope will leave a safe area to go and kiss someone on the cheek,
yes,
or to kiss their feet, or even just to listen to them. And for me, I think at home I'm thinking, wow, why is he doing that? That's not very safe.
Yes.
And then, but it's made such an impact on people.
Yes. He has said, actually, maybe he is so hurt, Terry, as you're saying, because he lives, St. John Paul II has said that, you know, that the world is not so much interested in teachers that are not witnesses, that we listen more to witnesses, and we see precisely what you're saying right now, his, Pope Francis's ability to, he's risking his life, and he knows he is, by the way, he's been warned, and he says, I know if I have to go, I have to go. But he's saying, I love you more than I love my life. And I'm going to live the fullness of my time here for you. And if I have to lose my life for it, then so be it. He's got nothing to lose. You see, he's so frail. He's walking like might be his last, might be his last step, and he has problems breathing, and yet he's still giving his last breath. Really for us as a human family, and risking his life, as you noted. Yes, we gathered yesterday for a breakfast and to watch the Holy Father, and we had a large group of students that came. I was very moved because it's early morning. They're not really early morning birds. And they came, and we prayed for his protection, and they were also very moved by that. You know, he's really very frail and taking a huge risk, and that just shows his love.
That was Sister Sylvia of the Catholic Newman Center at ISU with Terry James. Mark Sanford was caught in one of the most high-profile political scandals in the last decade. The former South Carolina governor admitted to having an affair with an Argentinian woman after he went missing, telling people at the time he was hiking the Appalachian Trail. One of the men tasked with helping repair Sanford's image was Barton Swaim, one of his speechwriters. What he did seems to have worked, as Sanford has since been elected to Congress, and Swaim has since written a book entitled The Speechwriter, A Brief Education in Politics. Swaim talked with WJBC's Steve Fast this week.
There are a number of surprising behind-the-scenes details you write about, and one of them is I didn't realize that it was part of a communications staff member's job to write what are called surrogate letters.
Yeah, that's caused a lot of interest, to my surprise, actually. And I don't know if it's every political office that does this, but for our boss anyway, he felt that letters to the editor that you read in newspapers are very powerful things. Now, most of us don't think that. Your typical letter to the editor in a local paper is overwrought, sometimes incoherent, you know, badly written, and so forth. And it's just a way for members of the public to sound off. But he felt that when a letter to the editor praised him, it was evidence of the citizenry's appreciation for what he was doing. And so you wanted more of these things, but when you would ask somebody, you know, one of your allies or activists or donors, hey, would you write a letter to the editor about such and such topic, the person might or might not do it, and even if he or she did it, the letter itself would be pretty bad. And so we would, and I think other offices do this, at least some, we would just write the letters for them, you know, dear editor, so-and-so, you know, just a couple of paragraphs, and email it or whatever to the activist, and that person would just send it in as is, usually. And so I didn't do that much of it, but on certain days I would have to write 20 or 25 letters to the editor, all of which had to be written in a different voice from a different point of view, but say about the same thing. And it was mental anguish doing this, but maybe it worked, maybe it didn't, I don't know, but it was my job.
Are op-ed editors wise to this practice?
They are now, maybe. I don't know, but I do think that they are cognizant of the fact that some letters are fake or ginned up somehow. You know, some organizations, you know, they give activist letters to send in, but the letters all say the same thing. They're not written uniquely from the letter writer's point of view. So you can tell for sure when you get 50 letters and they all say the same things and the same words. So this was a more boutique way of doing it, specialized.
Part of your job was providing communications and talking point advice to Governor Sanford. As you said, he really wanted you to echo his own words. He just didn't seem to want to write it himself. But when he would grapple with an issue, he'd want talking points. He'd want to be able to have that to fall back on. And as this went on and he grappled with his adultery scandal, he even faced impeachment. He would talk extemporaneously and sometimes incoherently about this. And then afterwards, he would sort of ask you and the staff to help him dig himself out. There's a positively surreal scene in your book where Sanford is trying to deal with his scandal, and he used a biblical analogy.
It was a couple of days after the scandal broke, and there was a previously scheduled meeting of the governor with his cabinet. And so, and all the national media were there filming whatever he would say. And so he chose the opportunity to do the, you know, maybe the second of many, many apologies, insincere apologies, as I thought. And in this sort of another rambling apology, he compared himself to the biblical character of David, who was, you know, the greatest king of Israel in the Old Testament, but who had this one episode, adulterous and murderous episode, and so on. Listeners will know the story. But afterward, he didn't think anything was wrong with it. And a number of people on the staff said, Governor, now is not the time to be comparing yourself with the great men of history. Okay. And it took some convincing for him to see that. But I think after a little bit of argument, he did sort of admit, you know, okay, maybe that was a badly chosen analogy.
But then he asked, he said, well, come up with some other biblical analogies that I can use.
Yeah. And he never followed up with that request, and I don't think he ever used any of the ones. That I don't even remember if I gave him any more. I was always the erudite member of the staff, you know, having a degree in English Lit. People thought I knew, like, history and stuff. So I was to come up with other biblical analogies that were maybe more appropriate. And the only one I could think of was Samson, who actually died by suicide in the end, so that wasn't altogether appropriate either.
Well, you know, the surprising thing, I think, about Sanford's approach in trying to deal with this scandal by saying things like comparing himself to King David is it seems like a far-off idea, but in terms of political strategy, it's kind of consistent. Sanford wasn't looking to be genuine or contrite. He was looking to hang his situation on some political rhetoric because, as you point out, politicians don't really live and die on what they do, but instead on what they claim.
Yeah, it was tough working in that office, and I think a lot of people who work in politics have this struggle where you come to a point where you think, is everything we're doing just for the sake of a talking point? Is everything we're doing just so that we can say that we lowered expenses by such and such, or we pushed for reform of such and such, and does it really amount to anything? Or, in other words, is it all just talking points? That was a struggle, and it's something that I still struggle with in even caring about politics. I don't work in it anymore, but you do wonder if it's any more than just rhetoric.
You're not in politics anymore, but Governor Sanford is. Your former boss is now a congressman, Congressman Sanford.
Yeah.
He came back from his scandal. He won a House seat. Were you surprised by this?
Right. I was not. And I wrote the last chapter of my book before he announced that he would run. And in some ways, I wish the book had come out earlier, because in it, I said that I knew that he was not done in politics. He's a very, like many politicians, he's a very ambitious man, and he does not think of himself as a failure in any way. He does not think of failure at all. He thinks when a disaster happens, or a total debacle in June of 2009, he doesn't think, well, it's over. He thinks, well, how much longer until the next achievement? So I was absolutely sure that he would run for something else. It was just a matter of what. And sure enough, he did. And he's a very capable and savvy campaigner and politician. And it really wasn't that surprising to me that he won. He had built up a lot of credibility on certain issues that people in South Carolina's first district cared a lot about. He had a maybe so-so opponent in that race. And not too terribly surprising that he won to me.
That was former Mark Sanford speechwriter Barton Swaim with Steve Fast. For a good laugh, comedian Bill Engvall will be performing at Illinois State University's Bone Student Center this coming Saturday as part of ISU's Family Weekend. He's known for clean comedy, and to some he's known for his appearance on Dancing with the Stars. He talked about both with WJBC's Susan Saunders this week.
I'm really Saunders. Honored that they picked me for Family Weekend. That's really nice.
Well, because you're one of those great comics that everybody can see. You know, there are some comics that go a little blue, and even though you were a big celebrity on the blue-collar comedy tour, you're not a dirty comic. So
Right. Well, that's what I try to tell other comedians, you know, young comedians, is you can talk about whatever you want. I mean, just do it clean, and people don't care. You know, listen, I'm not Disney on Ice. But it's, you know, people don't have to worry about me swearing and stuff like that. It's like, you can do this without all that.
Well, I was going to ask, since you have made it all the way up through the comedy ranks and then spread out into movies and other television projects, and congratulations again. I talked to you before you got kicked off of Dancing with the Stars, but making it as far as you did was an extreme accomplishment.
That made the finals. The only comedian to ever get to the finals.
I was very impressed in the effort that you put into that. when you've made it to this point, you've got, I'm sure, a number of young people talking to you, asking the question, how do I break into the comedy business? And I'm seeing less and less comedy clubs around. So what do you tell them?
Well, first off, if I had to start over today, I doubt seriously I'd make it. It is tough. You know, when I was in it in the 80s, you know, comedy was peaking, and, you know, there was a million clubs, and you could add all the work you wanted. I just tell them that, you know, you just got to get stage time whenever you can, and as much as you can. I don't care what, you know, you can't, I don't, these days, you know, and the other problem is that these days, you know, people put 5 minutes of stuff on YouTube, and all of a sudden there are sensations. Like, you still got to be able to do an hour, like at the show there, you know, there's going to be a 90-minute show. It's like, you know, 5-minute YouTube videos are fine, but, you know, you can't just keep repeating it. So
musicians have that problem. They have one hit song and they can't fill 60-minute slot in a concert, let alone a 2-hour slot as a headliner.
Yeah, it's like, so, you know, I don't know if it's just our attention spans are getting smaller, but I just tell young comedians and performers, I go, just get as much stage time as you can. I mean, even if it's just a guy doing a one-nighter in a coffee shop or, you know, whatever, you just got it. Because, like you said, there's not that much stage. There's not that many clubs anymore. And it's sad, because I think that people need comedy. They need to laugh, especially this day and age. I mean, it's so I think, you know, it's like, hopefully it'll get a resurgence. I mean, everything's cyclical, so hopefully it'll come back.
Tell me about the show you're doing at ISU. Are you working out material for maybe a future special?
Actually, the people that come see the show are going to get to see a sneak preview of the special I just shot. It's called Just Selling for Parts. And we talk about everything from Dancing with the Stars to my having a knee replacement, getting shingles, getting a kidney stone, having a crazy gene in my family that I pray doesn't raise its head in my lifetime, to my wife and I dealing with being alone and the M word showing up.
M word. What's the M word?
The menopause word.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll save that for Saturday.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's like the other day we're sitting there having breakfast, and she said, "Hey, tell me about your old girlfriend." And I'm like, "Boy, that's when you know you've been married a long time, when your wife actually wants to think about you with other women." And then I realized it was kind of an insult, because it was like she's saying, "Hey, tell me about the time when women found you attractive."
Oh, wow. tell me about the times when Bill's out on the street and people want to come up and say hi. What's the number one thing they want to talk to you about now? Dancing with the Stars, Here's Your Sign, or Sharknado 3?
Nobody's brought up Sharknado 3 yet. I saw it on Twitter. It was a big deal. But usually it's 50-50 between Dancing with the Stars and Here's Your Sign. Sharknado 3, when they called, I said, "I got to do this."
Yes, you should.
I said, my only prerequisite is I get eaten by a shark. And they said, "Oh, you do." I said, "Okay, great, I'm in."
And was it hard to get eaten by a shark in the show? I mean, was it physically difficult, or was it a big, giant green screen?
Basically, all you had to do was fall down.
And you're all good. But when people come up and talk to you about Dancing with the Stars, do they ask you the question I'm going to ask, which is, are you still dancing at all?
That's the overriding question. And I say, I do my honky tonking, but I'm not going to go just break into a tango somewhere, but I did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun, a lot of pain and hurt, but overall, they called me today and said, "We need you for Monday." I'd be there.
And it was an incredible, unexpected boon to your celebrity, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. 12 million people a week for 13 weeks. You can't buy that.
It's an absolutely incredible show that people don't realize you should fight to be on, because it has reinvigorated a lot of careers.
Although I think they're starting to get to the bottom of the barrel now. They got Gary Busey on this week.
But he's watchable.
That ought to be a train wreck.
And nobody said you had to be good on that show to succeed.
Nope. Obviously, I got on it.
No, but you were good. Any other television projects that you're working on, or movie projects?
We're always working on stuff. There's some people I'm talking to about two different types of shows. And then what's been really interesting is the independent film market's really opened up to me. I just last year did a family faith-based movie called Catching Faith that's in a Walmart and on Amazon. And then I'll be doing another one about a Christmas movie sometime in December. And then I just signed a contract to play a serial killer in another one. So,
like, no lie, like the serious serial killer, not like a prank
killer? When they called me and I said, "Dude, have you seen me?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I know exactly who you are." He said, "That's exactly what I want." And he said, "And that's who I want for the first 20 minutes you're on screen. And the last 5 minutes, you're going to scare the hell out of people." I went, "Okay."
Wow. Well, let's not talk about the name of that show, because that could be a spoiler alert extraordinaire. But
yeah.
I'm not sure I'm ready to see you mean.
You don't have to be mean to be a serial killer. You just got to be sick.
Oh, wow. That's a change and a half.
That was comedian Bill Engvall with Susan Saunders. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. It was 30 years ago this week the first Farm Aid came to Champaign. Organized by the likes of Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, and Neil Young to help farmers in danger of losing their farms through mortgage debt. WJBC's Dawn Robinson was at Farm Aid. She talked with our Dan Swaney this week.
How did you find out about the show? Because this was really put together very quickly.
It was, I think, because I was in news. I think I, you know, had a little bit early notice on that, and because it was taking place in Illinois, so there was a lot of coverage of it in the media at that time. I mean, no social networking or anything, of course, back in the 80s, but yeah, I had heard about it, and my mom and I were big music fans, and she loved to go to concerts, and she was in love with Bob Dylan. So what better way to see him and to see a bunch of other ones? I think now I'm showing my lack of country music knowledge, but there wasn't Waylon part of a super group, the Highwaymen?
The Highwaymen, yeah. We're going to play something by the Highwaymen from that concert.
That was part of the big draw, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we wanted to see Johnny Cash live, and there were quite a few acts on the bill. We had very different preferences, but we were both very, very satisfied by the music that day. It was an amazing lineup.
I don't think there's ever been a lineup that served everybody's need in music better than this concert did.
Well, no, and because I had actually been to Live Aid as well.
Oh, and that was just a couple months earlier, right?
Yes, and so I had been to that show, but there wasn't the, you know, the country and the Americana feel of that one. Of course, it was a lot more British-oriented, and there were a lot of American acts. But this one, and, you know, just being Illinois people, you are very, very aware of what's going on with the land and farmers, and at that time it was a real hot point. So we were really excited to get there and support it and, you know, have a great day.
By the way, Dawn worked here from 1986 to 1987, so she has a lot of perspective from
cup
here
of coffee,
in Central Illinois.
Cup of coffee,
yeah.
As we say in the biz.
It was a nice big cafe latte or whatever they call it these days.
Well, I'm, you know, the even a short amount of time working for Steve Vogel was just a wonderful experience to have.
Everybody says that. So the concert day comes along, and I think it's an absolutely wonderful story that you and your mom went together. Tell me about the day itself.
Well, she was always a huge music fan, so you know, she was really excited about it, and we had been to a lot of concerts together. But I know she had bought four tickets, and we ended up getting, like, the daughter of one of her friends brought her boyfriend with us. We put together a big cooler of food, like a lot of like fresh fruits and sandwiches and things like that, because, you know, they didn't have the security things that they do now, and we were able to just bring the cooler in to our seats and have it. And it was really wide open, you know. You could sit kind of wherever you wanted to, just that huge venue. And we went up into the bleachers, and we just kind of camped out with our spot. And it seems to me, you know, it was 30 years ago. It seems like it was a bit rainy during part of the day.
Pretty much most of the day until late in the afternoon. But it wasn't a hard rain. It was just kind of a drizzle, enough to make you feel wet.
Right. It was just yucky. But then later, I know it did get cooler after the sun went down. I remember we were prepared. We had blankets. We were comfortable the entire time and just had a great day. And my mom had been diagnosed with colon cancer a couple years before, and she, you know, she battled it for quite a few years, and so it was just neat to be able to have that memory with her and be able to see her boyfriend Bob Dylan and I was able to introduce her. I was always kind of an indie music girl, and I was really excited to see Lone Justice. They were one of my favorites at that time, a little band out of Texas.
Sure.
And so I was able to introduce her to them and X, who one of my college boyfriends was into. So we just had a really great day. And like you said, I mean, just the lineup and the variety of acts and being able to see Johnny Cash and John Denver. I mean, I didn't even remember seeing him, but he was in the lineup, so I know I did, and that would have been my first opportunity to do that. She was a real folk music fan, and so we got to see a lot of her favorites, and I know that meant a lot to her.
And she got to see Bob Dylan do a lot of different styles of music. I mean, if I remember right, he did some acoustic, but he got the electric guitar out towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And the song I'm going to play from him from Live Aid, what was cool about it is Willie Nelson walks up behind him just as he's getting ready to play, and the thought was is that they thought Bob Dylan was finished. But when he saw Willie come up, he said, well, I'm going to play another song. And he turned around and got into some, what was it? It's called Maggie's Farm. He played Maggie's Farm.
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And there were a lot of the collaborations where there were just so many acts, and they all were like fans of each other. And so that was a really, really cool aspect of that show and that time, was that they were all just having a great time together.
So I have to ask the easy question here. Which of the acts would you want to go back and see at Farm Aid again if you could?
Wow.
Or are there just too many? That's what most people have said today. There's just too many. I can't pick one or two. It was just so good.
I would say Johnny Cash.
Yeah?
He was, you know, spectacular, and I think I appreciate him more now than I did then, so I think I would really, really enjoy this.
Now it was former WJVC reporter Don Robinson looking back at Farm Aid in our Throwback Thursday interview with Dan Swaney. Redbird football coach Brock Speck doesn't have a game this week, so Scott Laughlin and Colleen Reynolds took a break from football and decided to play a different game, the newlywed game, with Brock and his wife Amy Speck this week.
How many years have you guys been married now?
31.
You should know each other.
We
like
don't know each other
book.
Very good, except not around very much.
All right. We presented Amy with these questions,
okay,
and you have to answer
She's
these
questions. She's
been very
questions. Good. She didn't tell me a word about it.
She better not have.
Yes. You're going to be angry then.
I heard you were a little apprehensive about this.
Yeah, I don't like this stuff, but that's okay.
Doing
right.
a little grilling, Amy, before
yeah,
this.
You can... You guys can make fun of me.
Okay, you're going to answer these questions in the way you think she answered them, okay? All right, what's her favorite color?
Blue. I know that one.
Is it blue?
Yeah.
That wasn't a question, but she said you were trying to get that out of her last night.
Yeah, I was trying to, but I knew it was blue.
I said they're not going to ask you that.
I know that for sure.
All right, where would Amy say your first date took place? Where was your first date?
It was at a, I know exactly. This was a, at the, we met at the Animal House. It's called the Animal House. It's friends of ours. And then it was a blind date. We went to a sorority dance, which I'm not a big Greek person, as you could tell. So.
All right, Amy, was the answer? What answer did you give?
The Valentine dance, that's true.
Valentine dance?
So forgot about the Animal House.
Did you tell her that she slammed her finger in the door before she got there? She's like an hour and a half late.
No.
Yeah. No, I forgot that part.
Yeah, she slammed her finger in the door. She's like Phyllis Diller over here.
It was, and the door was locked, and my sorority sister had the keys.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was bad.
Her finger was stuck in the door.
So who set you up? You said it was a blind date.
My roommate. She was dating a football player, Sonny Liston.
Yeah, he's done really well. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an attorney.
We literally.
Yeah.
Owns an avocado orchard in California. He's
You're doing okay. You're doing okay. All right, next question.
That's good, Sonny.
Who was interested in marriage first? What did Amy say? How did Amy answer that question? Who was interested in marriage first? You or
I don't know. She said me, probably, I'd say.
Amy?
I said mutual.
Oh, did you?
Said yeah. Mutual.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Well, I heard that she was stalking you or something, and that's what...
I thought you were going to tell the story about how you said, I looked out the sorority window every time you walked by.
Because you did.
Oh, stop.
Here comes that, what's his name, Brock.
With long hair and clogs.
Yeah,
right?
Long hair.
I love that.
No point
We're okay. trying to get a picture of you with the long hair and clogs for our
hair.
Throwback Thursday.
I said it was over your. They want to know how long it was. I said it was over his neck roll.
Over my neck roll. It's down here.
Oh, we've got to get a picture of that.
Yeah,
all right, let me
bad.
Ask you. We asked Amy, how did she answer this? What celebrity does Brock most resemble? How did
Nick
she
Nolte.
Answer that question? Nick Nolte. Nick, he doesn't even hesitate. I don't see that at all. Amy, your
Mike
answer?
Ditka.
Oh, Mike Ditka was the answer I came up with immediately.
Yeah.
All right, Nick
Nolte. Used to be Nick Nolte when I was in college.
Not that mugshot Nick Nolte.
No,
right?
That's,
okay.
No.
The young Nick Nolte.
What color was the front door on the first place you lived together?
Ooh, boy. I'm trying to think of that. I'll say beige. I have no idea.
Amy?
White, just an apartment door.
I don't remember. Right.
That's a wild
that's
question.
That's a tough question.
That's
I
a
asked
tough
Lori
question.
That last night. We guessed white. We guessed white. A little off white because we were living in sin. let's see here. If you're, Brock could be married to a movie star or celebrity, who would he choose? Well, how do you think she answered that question?
Wow. I don't know.
Could be any celebrity.
Boy, I don't know what she'd say.
3 seconds. Amy?
Serena Williams.
Serena Williams.
Yeah, she's very athletic. I like
all right.
Her.
You,
yeah.
You like the jock in her. All
I,
right.
I do
good.
Like that. Boy, what a
all
powerful.
Right. What is his, we asked her that. This question. What is her favorite fast food restaurant?
Hers?
Her favorite fast food restaurant.
Oh, I don't know. I McDonald's maybe? I don't know.
Oh, you are sucking at this, man.
You guys need to spend a little more time.
We don't spend any time together.
You know, he's always looking at film. I doesn't have time.
Yeah. And then he
all right. Now, was what was the answer?
Culver's.
Culver's.
Oh, Culver's.
All right.
Yeah. I didn't know this fast food. That's ice cream.
All right. Now, we asked her this question. When you first met her, what would Brock say was the one thing that caught his attention about you? You get that? Is that
Do you
right?
Really
Is that how you took that?
That
question, AMA?
Uh-huh.
On the air.
All right.
I liked her eyes and her freckles.
Oh,
there you go.
And your answer, AMA?
I talk a lot.
All right.
Boy, she would never shut up. I thought she was from the South, too. I was.
What did your mother say about you last week in the beer garden? The woman of 1,000 words.
Yeah, she can talk now.
All right. When you leave the house, what time is it for Brock? This is how she answered it. You have to guess how she answered it. When she leaves the house, is it party time? Time to clean or time to nap?
For her or for me?
For you.
For you.
When she leaves the house?
Yeah.
It's time to nap.
All right. How did you answer? Did
nap
you finally
time.
Get
yeah.
one?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. All right. I got
yeah,
it.
Like
all right. And now, if the prize for winning the game were a second honeymoon to any destination, where would you go?
St.
What do you
Thomas,
think your answer
Virgin Islands.
St. Thomas, Virgin Islands?
I said St. John's, Virgin Islands.
Oh.
Close. Come on.
That
close.
Works.
Unfortunately,
I
judges
would give it
say
to
no.
That was, you got to give that to
we
me.
Cannot.
Now.
We cannot. We have some lovely parting gifts for you.
Now it was ISU football coach Brock Spak and his wife, AMA, with Scott and Colleen. The Week in News is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Week in News. Pope Francis' speech to a joint session of Congress this week is being called special and energizing by those who witnessed it. Senator Dick Durbin says he was taken by the Pope's humility.
From the minute he drove up the White House in that little Fiat, I thought to myself, this fella is for real. I mean, from moving out of the papal apartments into a modest room, telling all of his cardinals and bishops to stow away their ermine capes and red Prada loafers, and genuinely seeking out and spending time with the poor.
The Pope called for abolishing the death penalty. Congressman Ronnie Davis says he wasn't totally surprised by John Boehner's decision to resign as House Speaker and give up his congressional seat, but says he didn't expect Boehner to resign before his current term was up. Davis said he appreciates what Boehner has done for him since he joined Congress.
He helped make sure that I was a member of two conference committees during the last Congress to negotiate important bills like the Farm Bill. And that's what I went to Washington to do, was to work together and get things done. And he gave me an opportunity to do that.
Davis believes the Republican Party will remain strong after Boehner's resignation is official at the end of next month. Bloomington's City Council approved a 1% sales tax increase this week that's expected to bring in about $9.6 million. WJBC's Joe Ragusa says part of the discussion this week focused on how to deal with an anticipated $7 million deficit in next year's budget.
Only half of the new revenue is expected to tackle that deficit. Alderman David Sage was unsure about whether to vote for the sales tax increase, so he asked each alderman on the council if they were serious about making cuts. That led to this debate between Alderman Scott Black and Mayor Terry Renner.
If I understand, I think Alderman Sage is asking if we're all ready to begin to make some cuts.
Yeah, and I'm saying
maybe
that we're not.
Like the ones that are on the budget task force. Which
I am saying that we are not. I don't think that this group here has ever, in my experience, demonstrated the
willingness. But we have a new council now, Scott.
I still don't think that's the case.
Joe Ragusa, WJBC and WJBC.com.
A McLean County jury has found Anthony Davis Dixon guilty of murdering a homeless Vietnam War veteran in June of last year in Bloomington. Davis Dixon was convicted of beating Ronald Smith in Bloomington at O'Neill Park. Smith died from his injuries about a month later. Two others, Tory Washington and Willie Chambers, have already pleaded guilty to murder and testified against Davis Dixon in the trial this week. The man accused of striking ISU student Benjamin Allison with his car and killing him in January has been found guilty of most charges, including misdemeanor DUI. A judge has given the defense some time to form an argument against a felony DUI charge. Joshua Dunn tested positive for marijuana after the fatal crash, but testimony throughout the day-long trial showed he did not use the drug that day. McLean County Prosecutor Jeff Horv says that shouldn't matter.
The law is crystal clear. There is no requirement that the state show impairment or any sort of nexus, as it's been referred to by defense counsel.
The judge will issue a ruling this week. And as state lawmakers try to pass budget bills without a spending plan, State Representative Dan Brady is wondering when will the state run out of money.
The real concern is that of the $32 billion roughly in revenue that we believe is coming in, believe that is there, with no budget, who's got the ticker tape? Who's got the meter going to say, as you spend, as the court keeps issuing orders to say, write checks, write checks, write checks, write checks? Who's tracking this?
Governor Rauner has told lawmakers he'll veto spending bills. The lawmakers are expected to send him to cover breast cancer screenings, autism services, and lottery payouts. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now to take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday, Bloomington's City Council will meet. Aldermen will consider a shoreline stabilization plan for Lake Bloomington. The City Council will also meet on Wednesday to review the budget. Also Wednesday, Time Person of the Year Ella Stryker will give a lecture at Illinois State University about a health educator's role in controlling Ebola. On Thursday, a judge will determine whether Joshua Dunn will be convicted on a felony driving under the influence charge in ISU student Benjamin Allison's death last year. And on Saturday, Illinois State football will begin Missouri Valley play hosting Northern Iowa, while Illinois Wesleyan will open conference play at Carthage. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Starr.